All opinions expressed here are the views of the speaker, not necessarily those of their hosts, producers, or owners.
Hello, I'm Stuart Alexander. Once again, I'd like to welcome our listeners to Socialist Can, 1 hour left. We come on once a week, every Wednesday, and we deal with social issues from a very left perspective. This week, we have our regular panelists that are coming on to share some information, and our subject today is imperialism, what it is and how it is a threat to the global community. And today we have Alan Mackey, Deborah Mackey, I believe Matt Oren is going to be joining us shortly. And I'd like to thank you for joining the program today.
Thank you for having us.
Deborah, what I'd like for you to do is just take a moment just to share what the program you host, Left of Liberal, on a weekly basis. And it comes on every Monday. Could you just share with our listeners about the program, when it comes on, and what you were talking about last week, this week?
It comes on at 7 o'clock Central every Monday. It's called Left of Liberal with host Alan and Debbie Mackey. We have a Facebook page with the same name. There are other Left of Liberals, so look for the White Peace Poppy, and you'll see our page. We also have a phone number. You can contact us at 512-517-2708, and an email at leftofliberal@outlook.com. And we have a lot of good guests. You were on last week. This week.
Right, I was there.
So you were able to talk about your the meeting that we're having in Austin on August 10th. It's an event that I've created. That's the very first thing you come to on the Socialist Can page. And if you can come, let us know so we know how many people to plan for.
And Deborah, as I mentioned, our program, it comes on every week. Your program is every week. So basically, it's a good source of information where people can be able to tune into either program to gain information from a left perspective. As I mentioned, our program today, we are dealing with a very important subject, imperialism, what it is and how it is a threat to the global community. Alan, I'd like for you to start our program today just by actually, I'd like to go around and ask the members of our panel, starting with Alan. Alan, how would you give a true definition of what imperialism is? What is it about?
Well, just a short definition. Imperialism has grown out of capitalism. It's another stage of capitalism, the highest stage of capitalism, where you have a concentration of production in the hands of monopolies. And then the banks have taken on a whole new role under imperialism. And the banks began financing the industrialist, and the industrialist and the bankers come together. And they have then tremendous wealth that they've attained through the exploitation of workers here in this country, and they get so much wealth, their greed causes them to seek out wealth in other countries by exploiting labor there and seeking cheap labor in those countries and cheaper resources. And so they export this capital to other countries. We see this going on all over the world, where the United States has, American corporations have companies now in the Philippines, South Africa, South Korea, all over the world. And then you have it results in other countries where the wealth of the bankers and the manufacturers begin to come together, like in England and Germany and France, Italy. And so you have this, now you have this division of the big capitalists around the world. And, you know, this is the imperialist stage, and it's very parasitic. And this causes wars. The capitalist countries are at each other's throats trying to derive bigger profits constantly. That's their whole main goal, and their quest is for greater profits every as a result of everything they do. And, you know, this is imperialism, and it sets the stage for war. It, like you see Trump and the tariffs and the sanctions and all this going on. And you
right.
see him dictating to Iran, you know, how they're supposed to live and what they're supposed to do. And you see him doing the same thing with Venezuela. This is how imperialism operates. We have a whole new stage of capitalism. And it's really the capitalists killing off themselves is what it amounts to. The thing is, are they going to take us down with them? You know, that's, and the solution to all this is, in my opinion, is socialism.
Deborah Allen, he gave a very good definition of what imperialism is about. What would you like to add to that?
Well, I just looked it up in the Oxford dictionary that's on my phone. It says a policy of extending a country's power and influence through colonization, use of military force, or other means. That's what they give.
Right. Now, we can see that the U.S. government is using all of that, and obviously they have done it for well over 200 years. Is Matt Owen, is he on the
oh,
line
yes,
yet?
Oh, yes, I am. Yes.
Yeah, Matt, I would like for you to add to, you know, we started with Alan in regards to the definition of imperialism, and also we had Deborah to give her input on that. How would you give a definition of what imperialism is about, Matt?
Well, basically, it's when one country, run by its ruling class, has hegemony over others, and basically compromises the rule of their ruling classes. Okay. Empires have been around since before capitalism. Capitalism got a huge jump start in 1492. Which started the process of European conquest of the world, a process which was interrupted when first the Anglo-American colonies, then the Latin American colonies, and we should note the colonists in these colonies, not the indigenous people, declared their independence from their European conquerors. And with that, we saw the emergence of a new post-colonial imperialism. The United States, of course, led the way in this post-colonial imperialism, in which you had U.S. Had two imperial projects going on at the same time. On the one hand, it was building a continental empire at the expense of the indigenous nations, going out and conquering them. And when that wasn't enough, it stole half a Mexico. But at the same time, you had the emergence of the so-called Monroe Doctrine, and the irony was that as enunciated, it was anti-imperialist, that is to say, anti-colonialist, that the U.S. would stand with the newly emerging Latin American states to defend them against European imperialism. But one of the first people to see through it was somebody from one of those countries who wanted to unify them, to keep them as united as the Anglo-American colonies had been, Simón Bolívar. He saw right through that project. He says, what's Monroe doing, trying to see to our defenses? Aren't we capable of doing it ourselves, seeing as, like the Anglo-Americans, we overthrew our colonial masters? It seems
right.
that, in his phrase, the U.S. is destined to inflict misery on the Americas in the name of liberty. So you had emerging from the U.S., a new post-colonial style of imperialism, even as the Europeans kept conquering the world in Asia and especially Africa, slicing and dicing Africa and the Middle East and so on. And then you began the wars of imperial redivision. This was the era in which Lenin was writing, in which the world had been divided up into colonial and post-colonial imperialism. And he saw coming the First World War, which he saw first and foremost as a war of imperial redivision, redividing, getting rid of some of the old pre-capitalist empires like the Ottoman and Austro-Hungarian Empire, which predated capitalism, slicing into China, turning it from a pre-capitalist empire into a whole series of colonies, including the new Japanese colony. As they conquered Korea, Japan joined the ranks of colonial-style imperial powers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that takes me. Okay, so that project was still going on when Lenin and Luxembourg both wrote about it. Lenin, in critiquing Hobson's imperialism as study, using material from Rudolf Hilferding's Finance Capital, noted that there was something new going on, something that had started already in Marx's day, but really came out in the 20th century. And that was, of course, the monopoly capitalism stage, monopolism, which set the stage Lenin was answering Hobson's question, which was, well, for the average British taxpayer, the British Empire is losing money. Why do we keep doing it? Okay, it's a drain on the British exchequer. Why are we still doing it? And Lenin says, well, because there's certain Britons that are getting really wealthy from it. And then he
Right.
the Hilferding study. So Luxembourg, on the other hand, in her study of imperialism, says, well, this is still the same process began in 1492. Okay, it's just, so there it's a different phase of the same process of capitalism's imperialist project. Okay, so
I
now
we're
seeing post-World War II is the rise post-colonial imperialism. There are almost no out-and-out colonies of other countries left. And so
right.
what we see is the American model of post-colonial imperialism, in which you have imperialist powers basically using their advantage at the expense of people in other countries, okay, even though they are in nominally sovereign states. Okay, they're always finding ways to compromise this sovereignty. And since 1992, the rest of the world has been confronted by the last standing post-colonial imperialist power of any consequence, and that's the one that started the whole cycle of post-colonial imperialism in the United States. Okay, the challenges to it are only now being reformed, okay, after they were smashed in 1992.
Right.
So, we're in the 21st century, it's getting pretty dicey, because if there's going to be another war for redivision, it's going to be World War III.
Well, that's the only thing that's left. Alan, I want to ask you, how is U.S. imperialism a threat to global peace?
Well, as these capitalists try and grab up more and more, and as they exploit workers in other countries and take the resources away from other countries, the people rebel. And as when the people rebel, the United States sends in their military. That's why we have like 850 military bases around the world in these foreign countries. And it's to oppress the people. As imperialism gets stronger, it also oppresses the people right here in our own country more, and as it oppresses people all over the world more and more. And this, I've been referring to it lately as the United States of Trump. And, the Wall Street has been using Trump to try and enforce a whole new world order. And most countries aren't standing for this, and they're going to rebel. And what does Trump
isn't
have to
it a
do?
Good example what just happened with Angela Merkel when she was supposed to been meeting with Pompeo? And the thing is, she has been moving away from the policies of the Trump administration, and you can see it with just the recent meetings that they've had with the German chancellor, where now we just totally disregard meetings with her, and Pompeo just went and jumped on a plane and went to Iraq instead, like it was like, well, the meeting with you is not important. But the way that they are disregarding their allies, they're disregarding treaties. I mean, I see that is, you know, right now it's a system that is totally out of control, Alan.
Yeah, they want to stage a war on Iran from Iraq, but even their puppet government in Iraq won't tolerate the United States using their country as a staging ground to launch a war against Iran. And then Trump, you know, he talks about obliterating Iran. And, you know, this is the mindset of these imperialists, that they can no longer have their way, as the people say no to everything they want to do, to all their dictates. And their only alternative now is to threaten people with obliteration. And it's only a matter of time before, you know, you have all these nuclear-armed countries and everything before they start
to
go after
each other.
That's
a good point that you just brought up. I mean, Deborah, I mean, here you have Trump saying he's going to wipe Venezuela off the map. Maybe he forgot that there's, you know, 30-some million people living there. He's going to wipe Venezuela off the map. He's going to completely blow North Korea off the map. He's going to completely level the country. He's going to completely destroy Syria. He's going to completely destroy Iran. I mean, Deborah, I mean, when you have a leader of a country, if you want to call him that, you have a maniac running a country, and he's talking about destroying everyone. I mean, that in itself, Deborah, seemed like it's a threat to global peace when you have that type of leadership. What is your opinion on that, Deborah?
Well, and they try to look like they don't want to hurt the people, but yet they put all these sanctions
right.
on the people.
They don't want to hurt the people.
They don't want
to
hurt the people.
We don't want to kill 150 people, you know, so we won't blow you up today.
So what are we going to do? We're going to move everybody into concentration camps in Iran and then bomb the you-know-what out of the country, but just don't bomb these concentration camps. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. How can you not hurt the people when you bomb the heck out of a country?
When you put
all these sanctions on and the blockades, it hurts. It hurts the country. And they act like they are just, you know, they send humanitarian relief and well, it's pitiful.
Matt, you know, I'm in my late 60s, but I've never seen so many threats of sanctions and going to go and bomb a country and blockades of any country. I mean, the U.S. doing anything like this in the last 50 or 60 years. I mean, has the U.S. made a ratchet in regards to their threat to a different level, Matt?
Well, very interesting thing is happening in the U.S. Because Trump is about to go meet with Putin again at the G20 and other people, but mainly Putin, because Putin is going to insist on it. Basically, he's going to, as he has before, but in more detail this time, he's going to tell Trump, hands off Iran, hands off Venezuela. Don't even think about North Korea, because they'll blow you off the map. And we don't have to lift a finger. But, you know, the Iranians can do it, too. The Americans have known the Iranians can do it since they invaded Iraq. They did I forget the name of the exercise, but it was as they were preparing to invade Iraq, the question was asked by the U.S. military, what if, once we invade Iraq, we just cross the Shatt al-Arab and go invade Iran? So they gamed it. and their computer simulation showed that the Iranians had sufficient missiles at that time, 2002, to obliterate the Fifth Fleet, obliterate the Air Force, obliterate any land forces. That the, it's the Iranians would do the obliterating. You know, the modern surface-to-surface missile has rendered aircraft carriers and everything else as obsolete as
right.
the airplane did the battleship. Okay,
it's right.
Billy Mitchell Redux. Okay, except Billy Mitchell was court-martialed, and in the case of this Millennium Challenge, was what it was called, exercise, the simulation which combined live drills with computer simulations to, you know, fill in the gaps. They reset it to reset the parameters to rig the game to where the U.S. forces win. Okay. Imagine if Billy Mitchell was ordered to redo his attacks so that the battleship could somehow survive the attack of the aircraft. You get some idea how crooked this was. And so, basically, the U.S. military has known since 2002 that they can't invade Iran. Okay. If they try, they'll be destroyed. They know it.
Oh, that,
and the Iranian
is four times the size of Iraq.
Yeah. And, well, Iraq was enemies with its neighbors, with both Iran and Syria. Iraq now is a solid ally of both Iran and Syria. Okay, they have the problematic of remaining U.S. forces from the overthrow of Saddam. But make no mistake, the Iranian government is allied, or the Iraqi government is allied with both Iran and Syria, where before you had three governments that didn't get along. Now you got three governments that are pretty solid all along the north shore of the Persian Gulf and the northern borders of Saudi. As far as the casting for allies, the Americans have to go across the Gulf to the people that call it the Arabian Gulf and go to those gleeful head choppers over in Saudi and their puppet governments in Qatar and Bahrain and the UAE. Not exactly puppets, but, you know, first among equals, shall we say. Talk about imperialism. But the Americans are about to learn again that these credible deterrents exist in Iran, rapidly under construction in Venezuela. And the thing is, when Trump comes back with that message, he'll be attacked by the Democrats as being Putin's puppet. Guaranteed. That's guaranteed.
Right.
The new McCarthyism will turn on him full bore. Okay? We'll turn on Trump full bore when he delivers the bad news. If he doesn't, if he just tries to blindly ignore it, then things are really going to hit the fan, because then those under fire will have to deliver the message as they just did in downing the drone. Not the American spy plane with 30-plus crew that it was tracking to film it being downed. Oh, no. Iranians saw right through that, and instead of downing the crewed aircraft, they downed the drone with nobody aboard. Okay, so they showed not only that they were capable
restraint.
Of responding to threats, they were capable of restraint and precision. That drone is little compared to that great big aircraft that they saw in there. What's this? So they figured out that was there to film the downing of the other plane. Okay,
right.
The crew probably didn't even know it was there. It's like, what's that doing there? Here we are surveilling the Iran. So they probably didn't even know the drone was tracking them. And so the Iranians shot that down. They're like, okay. So
any way you want to look at this, that was, they were actually spying over Iranian territory. Any way you want to look at it. You know, now they can say that they were in their sovereign rights because, you know, protecting American interests. They weren't. They were spying over a sovereign government. Bottom line.
As Pepe Escobar also pointed out, he's my primary source in a lot of this. There are no international waters right at the tip of the Persian Gulf, the Strait of Hormuz. Forgive me, the Strait of Hormuz. There's a sticks out past the UAE. There's a little bit of land claimed by Oman, and then on the other side is Iran, and it's less than 24 nautical miles between them, which means like the channel in between the U.S. and Canada, there are no international waters. It's either one side or the other side. And so what the
right.
Iranians were saying was that the spy plane strayed from the Omani waters into Iranian waters. They were tracking it, the big spy plane and the drone. When it come over their waters, just take out the drone. So they did.
I want to ask Deborah, then Alan. Deborah, what danger is U.S. imperialism to our allies? Because, you know, the allies, it's like a bully, and a bully is going against other bullies, and then you have the guys that like to hang out with them. They say, no, because it looked like it's going to turn into a real fight, so they want to just kind of watch from the sidelines. But, I mean, we have the U.S. trying to drag Poland into this. They want to drag Germany. They want to drag France into it. They're trying to get Japan involved. They're trying to get Ukraine. They're trying to get the state of Georgia involved. They're trying to get every government, the U.K., they're trying to get the Canadians, the Australians. They're trying to get everyone involved in a war that they're trying to build. They're even trying to get the Iraqis involved. They're even talking to the Taliban this week, trying to get them involved. But, Deborah, let me ask you, what danger is U.S. imperialism to our allies?
Well, it is. It is a danger. If they get involved with the shenanigans that the United States is doing, then they're going to be a target too, just like you said. And you know, Wall Street has an interest all over the world, and so they go after other countries to get them to go along with Wall Street and with this administration. It's going to do nothing but put them in danger too. Not only other countries, but our service men in other countries, the American people will be in danger too. Travelers to other countries will be U.S. travelers to other countries could be in danger too. So people just need to open their eyes and see what's going on.
You know this. You know the subject we're talking about today, U.S. imperialism. I ask our listeners, just think of what imperialism is about. Do you understand what it is about? Do you understand the ramifications of what U.S. imperialism is about? And this is a question that I can ask hundreds of people here in this country. I mean, some people don't even know what the capital of the U.S. is. But I could ask a lot of people, what is imperialism? They wouldn't have a clue what that word means, but you know, there's information here that we really need to understand what the implications of our actions are on a global scale. We need to be discussing this. I'm just going to take a quick pause just to let our listeners know that they are tuned in today to Socialist Can, 1 hour left. We come on every week at the same time. Today our subject is imperialism, what it is and how it is a threat to the global community. I'd just like for Deborah just to take a moment just to mention about a Left of Liberal, which comes on every week, and also just to mention about what was on your program this week, please.
Yeah, it's called Left of Liberal with hosts Alan and Debbie Mackey. We have a Facebook page that you can find that has a look for the White Peace Poppy, and that's us. There are other Left of Liberal pages, so be sure you get the one with the White Peace Poppy. We have a phone number at 512-517-2708 and an email at leftofliberal@outlook.com. We have a lot of good guests on our program, and we had Stuart Alexander, on our program last week.
And
talking
thank you for
about,
inviting me.
Yeah, talking about an event that's going to happen August 10th in Austin, And if you join the Socialist Can Facebook page, you'll see it's the first thing when you scroll through. It's an event that's the first thing, and if you can let us know if you're coming so we know what to plan. Also, our program is on at 7 p.m. on every Monday, 7 Central.
And I might mention for the meeting that we have coming up in Austin, there is no charge, no fee for attending that event. Of course, donations are always welcome. So we look forward to having our listeners to go to our Facebook page to contact us. Socialist Connection Action Network, and we would like to invite you to that event. Alan, the U.S. has 840 bases, military government bases around the world. Is this necessary to protect American interests, or is it to protect the interests of the global ruling elite and Wall Street, Alan?
Well, these bases only exist to protect Wall Street's interest. And, you know, we got to put this in perspective. What does imperialism cost the American people? Think of 850 U.S. military bases, what each one of those bases is costing us. You know, what we could have instead of those 850 bases around the world, we could have 850 healthcare centers all over the United States providing free healthcare for the American people through a national public healthcare system. And so, you know, while there's a cost to the people of the world, the violence and the barbarity and the savagery that is rained on the peoples of the world by U.S. imperialism and the wars and the oppression and repression, you know, we're paying a heavy cost for imperialism ourselves right here in this country. And, you know, it's a terrible price. We could have a healthcare center in every city and every neighborhood based on the model of public education. That's not controversial with anyone. And yet these politicians say, you know, there's no money for healthcare. And these same politicians say, you know, they rant and rail against socialized healthcare. And yet this national public healthcare system, which would be publicly financed, publicly administered, and publicly delivered, is the best kind of healthcare we could possibly have. And the only thing preventing this is this imperialist, the imperialist policies of this country that spend so much money on militarism and war that we can't afford the things that people need. And, you know, there would be more than enough money for a public health care system if, you know, we reaped a huge peace dividend by closing down these military bases and restricting the military to our own country, to the defense of our own country. And we would save a heck of a lot of money, and the people here in the United States would be better off, and the people all over the world would be much better off. And peace is, you know, really the most profitable venture that we can engage in as human beings, is to stop this insanity of militarism and war. And there's huge dividends to be reaped from that. You know, all these capitalists always talk about reaping huge dividends from their investments. Well, the American people could invest in the peace movement and reap some huge, huge benefits as a result.
Matt, I would just want to take that to in regards to all these military bases that we have. But does the U.S. respect, I mean, when you look at what we're spending on supposedly to protect American interests, and also we're setting up bases in other countries basically for the benefit of the U.S. government, does the U.S. respect the sovereignty of any nation or its allies? Matt?
No. The only thing that the U.S. government respects is force. The only thing. And what's interesting is that what the targets of the U.S. forces are demonstrating is that this aggression can be deterred relatively cheaply. Okay, which means that the U.S. could deter aggression relatively cheaply without resorting to weapons of mass destruction, particularly if it continued the process which began at the end of the Cold War of a build-down, a mutual build-down, that it started with the Soviet Union and briefly continued with the Russian Federation and then abandoned and walked away from it. Okay. You look at the end of the Cold War. The Cold War ended with an agreement that NATO would not expand past where it had already expanded, except that reunified Germany would be allowed into NATO provided that foreign forces didn't cross the line and occupy the bases that the Soviets abandoned. Since that time, NATO has expanded not only into the former Warsaw Treaty countries, but also into former Soviet republics. And Ukraine is trying to get in. The present Nazi regime in Ukraine is trying to get in to NATO, okay, right at the borders of the present Russian Federation. The agreements that were signed that technically ended the Cold War didn't. It just ensured that the winning side would keep on waging it. And now we have an open return to the Cold War on different bases, okay, the same physical targets, the same countries as target, but on different bases. And not only a new Cold War, but a new McCarthyism, okay? If you're critical of Russophobia, and I get this all the time from people who should know better. If you're critical of Russophobia, you're pro-Russian, okay, which is not the same thing at all. Or you're pro-Russian government or pro-Putin or something like this, which isn't the same thing at all.
No.
So the U.S. is being swept by a new McCarthyism. Okay, Trump certainly didn't invent it, and he risks being swept aside by it. Again, we could see this as easily as this upcoming weekend when he comes back from the G20, and we'll see what kind of spin he has. He may say one thing one day and one thing the next. That's Trump, okay? But Putin is going to be very consistent. On the other hand, he's going to say no, niet. Okay, it's not happening. You're not attacking Iran. You're not attacking Venezuela. You already know better than attack North Korea. It's nonsense. But you're not attacking either Iran or Venezuela or Cuba or any of these others. Okay. You're not going to retake 1 centimeter of Syria. Okay, other than where CIA is already stationed. That's not happening. So these things are not happening. Just write them right out of your appointment book and go do something else. Okay. That's really, unlike Trump, Putin is going to be very, very consistent. And the Chinese are going to back
would do that
every step of the way. Huh?
And I agree with you. But I just don't think, because right now they're so hell-bent on, that they're going to, when they look at a country, like they're not through with Venezuela mm-hmm. yet. They're not through with mm-hmm. Syria. They're definitely
not
through with North Korea. And they're going to do whatever it takes, because they look at that, those resources, those 112 billion barrels of oil that's underneath Iran. The, mm-hmm. the global capitalists, they believe that's our oil. The 300 billion oil reserves on the Venezuela, the capitalist mm-hmm. elite, the way they look at it, that's our property. I mean, mm-hmm. that's a warped sense of, of taking leadership and responsibility when you believe that what someone else has is yours and all of it is mm-hmm. ours.
Yeah.
But
what may happen
after – yeah.
After Friday, what may happen is that, Trump, like most bullies, is a coward, and he'll be faced with the facts, okay? And he'll try to put the best spin on, basically having had that denied to him. His own people are going to turn on him. His Warhawks are going to turn on him. The Democrats are going to turn on him. He might not.
Personally, I don't believe Trump is in charge anymore. I don't know if he ever was in charge.
No, he's not. He's an amateur. He was never a member of the political class. This is the first public office he's held. That was true of Hitler, too, by the way. That was the first public office he ever held.
Right.
But he was a war veteran and very cunning. Very cunning. Trump is none of these things. Okay?
No.
So,
he's a con man.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a con man. And, again, he's not a member of the political class. He's an amateur. His Trumpsters love him for that. You know, for all his, you know, blunders and lies.
I believe, personally, what was needed at this point of the game for the U.S. to be able to spread their influence and to look at dominating dominating the resources within the international community, they needed someone that they could use as a puppet, you know. But the people that are really running the show are those two clowns, Pompeo and Bolton. Alan, I want to ask you, are treaties completely meaningless to imperial powers? Because Matt was saying that Trump is going to be going to the G20 in just a few days, but everything that he comes back and starts telling the American public, all of it's going to be lies. I can tell people already before he gets there, before he gets in front of television, before he starts tweeting, everything that he tweet will be a lie. But in regards to the treaties, are the treaties, are they completely meaningless to governments such as the U.S.?
Well, it seems to be. I don't think anybody can trust any treaty that's been signed now to be enforced. You see that they did away with the nuclear treaties with Russia, and they've done away with the, you know, all kinds of other treaties and trade agreements, yeah. And they're going to continue to do that, just like the agreement with Iran. We see almost all the other leaders in the world want that agreement to be enforced, and yet Trump, he is the one that broke that treaty. I don't think any other government has been breaking treaties at all except for the United States. And I think that a situation where the other countries can't trust the treaties that they've entered into with the United States, and they don't, you know, essentially what Trump says is, I'll break a treaty whenever it's against our best interest. And by our best interest, he means Wall Street's interest. So, you know, I think the whole world is worried right now what is going to happen. There's no kind of there's nothing they can look to. I mean, treaties are a way that keep world order, that keep things operating sort of in the normal, and the trade agreements and everything. And none of this stands anymore. If Trump wants them broken, they're going to be broken. And I think the people all over the world are very worried about this, and they can't depend on the United States for anything anymore. And
it's kind of scary when you have someone that a country that is not reluctant to break treaties and just disregard international law, and that same country has 34,000 nuclear weapons, that's a scary situation.
Well, if you look at the people that are backing Trump, these big capitalist oligarchs, you know, the billionaires, these people really believe that they can dominate the world, that they have all the power, and everybody is their little peon and serf. And this is the way they're looking at things. And, they're making a big mistake, because the peoples of the world are not going to stand for this. Even right now, we saw a great big economic conference held in St. Petersburg, Russia. Over 10,000 people attended, including the members of the European Union, all these finance ministers and everything. And, why would they go to an economic conference in St. Petersburg, Russia, if they're going to go along with what the United States is doing? They're afraid that they can't depend on the United States, and they're going to have to, what they're looking for is other trade partners. So it's just like with Canada. Just today, China said that they're not going to accept any more imported meats from Canada. This is going to hurt Canadian farmers. The Canadian government is going to have to start dealing with their own farmers that are upset about all this, and the workers that are going to be losing jobs in Canada as a result of all of this. You know, where does this end? It's just total insanity.
Deborah, is international law recognized by imperial powers, or do such powers consider their powers to be above these laws?
No, I think the United States, the imperialist United States, is just laughing at international law. There should be an international criminal court that keeps countries like this in line and to follow the international law, but it's just pretty well useless.
You know,
Matt,
that Stuart,
yeah.
You know, we're talking about Trump going to a meeting of the G20. This is 20 capitalist countries. There's like some 200 countries in the world that don't participate in this. I think these people in the rest of the world understand that they're not part of the decision-making process at all anymore. And probably
most of these
G20 countries probably think they're not part of the decision-making process anymore either.
No, they're not. Right now, when Trump goes there, he will walk in the room like, you know, the only decisions that matter will be the ones that come out of the Oval Office. That's bottom line what it would be. Matt, for imperial powers in the 21st century, is it about protecting national interests or their global interests? Matt?
Well, I think it's crucial to understand that the interests of the vast majority in any country are diametrically opposed to the interests of the ruling class. And that's very true in the United States. We can repeat J.A. Hobson's argument on that, that he made a century ago against British imperialism at a huge scale. We can make the exact same argument that not only can we make the same argument that Hobson made in Imperialism a Study, but we can also reiterate Lenin's reply as to, well, just why is it happening? That there are some people that are getting fantastically wealthy off this at the expense of everybody, inside and out of the imperialist metropole. Okay, it's not helping us. U.S. imperialism isn't helping, except maybe to keep some commodity prices down, and that's about it. But there is a government that is in the position, if they so chose, if they were ready for it, to impose crippling sanctions on the U.S., and that is China, in the form of dumping their dollars. They don't want to do that because then the U.S. market dries up. But what is the U.S. market? The U.S. market sends out these IOUs, being our currency, which is why there's so much of it floating around. And then those IOUs are never paid back by imports, you know, by exports to the countries where those IOUs are. Okay, so really all these dollars floating around are a bunch of IOUs. And if the Chinese decide that now's the time that it has to come due, okay, that's it. That's when the greenback goes the way of the Venezuelan Bolivar. Okay, and the U.S. simply won't be able to import anything. And it's fantastically dependent on those imports. Okay, not just of raw materials, but of cheap goods from China and other countries. They're very dependent. And so the Chinese haven't done this because then they would, up until now, be sanctioning their own economy heavily. And nobody wants to do that. You know, they have all those trillions of dollars that they themselves would be making worthless, along with the financial instruments that back those dollars up. Who knows if the U.S. government is foolish enough to attack Iran and pay the consequence, or Venezuela and pay the consequence. those consequences can be compounded enormously by the Chinese just throwing those financial instruments and those greenbacks on the world's currency and securities markets, okay, which would instantly devalue them and cause an avalanche effect, okay, a stampede, if you will, of people trying to get rid of theirs because now it's gone way down and, you know, the bottom's not in sight yet. And there's no way that the U.S. could leverage that the way it did, you know, artificially suppressing the price of gold by buying huge shorts through intermediaries. Okay, there's no way. And so the U.S. would be put in a very untenable position. Absolutely. Relatively, it's already in an untenable position, A, because of that fiery vulnerability, and B, because, you know, the Trump administration is foolish enough to think that, you know, things like tariffs won't be reciprocated. They're reciprocated the same day they go out, be it the Mexican government, the Chinese government, the Russian government, whatever. The tariffs are reciprocated immediately. The sanctions will follow. Okay, that is to say the various sanction regimes. Those haven't been reciprocated yet.
Right.
The means to reciprocate them in the case of the Chinese do exist. Okay, the tariffs have already been reciprocated. That was automatic. And so basically they, you know, all they did was like the Smoot-Hawley tariffs that triggered the Great Depression, they just depressed the world economy because that much trade is decreased. Okay, so, you know, brilliant kid, you just shot yourself. You know, nobody moves and the kid gets it. Yeah. How's that whole damn feeling? So, it's just, again, it's amateur hour. It's like with the treaties. The U.S. has always violated treaties, but it hasn't walked away from them. It's just it's just claimed that it didn't violate the treaty. It's like the treaty at the end of the Cold War. They said, well, this treaty was with the Soviet Union. Look at a map. That country doesn't exist. We don't have a treaty with the Russian Federation. It didn't exist when we inked that. Okay, so now we go back to scratch. So
I have four more minutes.
Trump
here.
Is doing something. He is doing something different. He's openly walking away. See, that's the thing. He's given the game. He's making the admission that the U.S.
Well, basically, what
care.
Trump has done is he is saying all the rules and everything that governs international law. He just threw the book away. But I have one question I would just like to ask the three of you. We have around another 3 minutes here. And I'll start with Deborah, then Alan, then we'll finish with Matt. Is there any difference today between the U.S., the U.S. today and Nazi Germany? Alan?
Well, we're certainly moving in the direction that that Germany moved in under Hitler. And, you know, a good book that people can read would be It Can't Happen Here. But I'd also like to point out that imperialism is causing us a lot of problems on our southern border. You know, the imperialist policies of exploiting people all over the world, especially in Latin America and South America, is what's resulting in so many people trying to get into the United States now because their lives have been made so miserable by American corporations down there. So we got concentration camps now on our border.
Well, my question is, do we have any control over what's happening to us today? I mean, did we vote Trump in? I mean, he's not who won the people's vote. The people don't seem to have much voice anymore, and they're killing unions. They're making people believe that socialism is bad when it actually gives people their voices. And they are they're causing authoritarian rule here, starting with things like shutting down the Planned Parenthood centers, taking away women's rights and women's voices, doing away with a lot of regulations that protect people and their environment.
And still locking up
these...
a lot of blacks and throwing them in jail and killing them on the street.
Yeah.
Matt? I have two more minutes.
We're not there yet, but I agree with the other panelists that we're rapidly moving in that direction. The metric that I read, how you know that the fascists have won, is when protest becomes illegal, it becomes lethal. That we haven't, obviously, we haven't reached that yet, although some people are being killed willy-nilly, okay, and not from openly political motives, okay, just because they happen to be of the wrong demographic. But as far as, you know, political killing, that hasn't happened yet to any appreciable extent. As far as protest being illegal, they're working on it. It hasn't happened yet, but they're working on it. But the U.S. is definitely moving in that direction. But at the same time, just as with the Weimar Republic, the counter movement is also picking up steam. You had the massive boycott of the 2016 election, in which more people refrained from voting than voted for either candidate. That's a huge metric. And roughly the same percentage of people now approve of socialism. You know, okay, they have various, you know, ideas as to what that might mean, but they approve of it as a critique of capitalism. Okay, so we have roughly 40-some-odd percent that boycotted the election. We have roughly 40-some-odd percent that approve of socialism as a critique of capitalism. And out here in California...
Well, Matt, I have 30 more seconds. I have 30 seconds here.
So, as in the Weimar Republic, there are strong movements in both directions. Okay, the victory of one over the other is by no means guaranteed. Okay.
And I want to thank our panel for joining us today to discuss this very important subject. We must take action on the left. We must support leadership on the left. We must all get involved. We can't expect it from our leaders, but we need to get involved. Part of that involvement would be just getting involved with Socialist Can. We are a very progressive left group, and we believe that we can make a difference. Once again, I'd like to thank our listeners for joining our program today, Socialist Can, 1 Hour Left. We look forward to having you to join us next week. Remember, when you see the link, Socialist Can, 1 Hour Left, be certain to click on it, listen to the program, and to share with other friends. I'd like to thank Alan Mackey, Deborah Mackey, Matt Oren, and also Ruth Ann Always for making this possible. Look forward to having you to join us next week. Have a good night, everyone.
Good night.
Night.
Good night, everyone.
Night.